Yo, welcome back to TL Talks Podcast. I am TL. It's good to have you. Let's start with TL's thought of the day. Thought of the day is going to be pertaining to the Browns. Unfortunately, not only did the Browns lose on Sunday, but there's also something that happened after the game with a player named Jermaine Whitehead. He exchanged some tweets with some people, said some egregious things, and was released by the team the next day. So pretty much worst case scenario as far as social media exchange. So my thought of the day pertains to reaction to people's actions or words, whether it be in person or on social media. Let me give you a quick disclaimer. What Jermaine Whitehead did is not cool. It's not acceptable. It's ridiculous. Unprofessional. Just a lot of bad things about what he did. And so I'm not making an excuse for him. I don't support what he did. I don't think it's okay. But I had a good conversation with a buddy of mine, Ryan Lentzel, who I plan as having a guest on this podcast eventually. And Ryan's a good friend of mine. He does a great job of being a good friend and giving me good advice and giving me sound advice and good perspective on a lot of things. And so I like talking to him when I can. We had a conversation after because he had put something on Twitter, his Twitter, saying that he's really concerned for Jermaine Whitehead as far as his well-being. And I called him and I said, hey, man, you know, me and you agree on almost everything, but I don't agree with, or I don't really see where you're coming from when you say you're worried about Jermaine Whitehead's well-being, because in my opinion, I don't support what he did, and I don't really have any sympathy for him either, because, you know, he's a grown-ass man and he chose to say those words and, you know, take that action. And so I don't, you know, he has to suffer the consequences. So what Ryan explained to me was that from his perspective, when people do things, he used terms like hurt people. And also, you know, pretty much the point of what he was saying was everybody has a story and everybody, you know, was raised differently. They all have different experiences in life, and all those experiences and upbringing, et cetera, all adds up to who you are today. And so it's easy when people do things that are messed up or say things that are messed up to just pin them with a broad stroke and say that's a bad person, or that's, you know, that person's racist or that person's whatever. It's easy to do that. It's easy to judge people. But what's not easy and what we should do, and this is Ryan does a better job of this than I do, is he doesn't jump to judging right away. And he tries to be a little bit more empathetic to people in general by saying things like, you know, or thinking things like, you know, hurt people, and everybody's got a story. There's a reason they're acting that way, right? And so I admire Ryan for a lot of different reasons, but in this instance, you know, it was very obvious during that conversation that he was much further along as far as understanding that about humans and how a more balanced mindset about how we look at humans, how that looks basically. And so it was good for me. It showed me a little bit of room for growth for myself. And so I appreciate the conversation as I always do. And so that's my thought of the day, just that, you know, anybody can judge and it's easy to judge. And especially in today's social media, that's definitely easiest thing to do. But what's not easy and what we should do is look a little bit deeper, right? Look for why people are doing things and being a little bit less quick to judge and a little bit more empathetic about people, because at the end of the day, people are just people. People all were babies one day, and they all had experiences, you know, that pretty much shaped them into the adults they are today. And so try to keep that perspective regardless of circumstance. Moving on to football talk. So this week's football talk is going to be more entertaining than most, because Sunday was a very big day for me. The Browns played the Denver Broncos in Denver for the second year in a row. So I felt very spoiled to be able to watch my Browns in person, because I live in the Denver area. for the second year in a row. So I was, you know, I had an awesome seat to the game, best seat I've ever had at a football game. Was pretty much guaranteeing victory for the Browns. You know, I feel like the Browns are a better team than the Broncos. The Broncos were starting their backup quarterback, his first NFL start. I mean, all the stars were aligning for a Browns victory. And so I was looking forward to, you know, being there in person and enjoying that. Well, much to my dismay, the Browns did not win. The Browns lost to the Broncos 24-19 on Sunday afternoon. And I got to tell you guys, you know, I've been a Browns fan since the late 80s. And most of the time I've been a Browns fan, the Browns have been a bad team. And I've grown kind of accustomed, not proud of that, but grown accustomed to rooting for a bad team and a team that finds ways to lose and, you know, a team that drafts, you know, does dumb draft picks and makes dumb moves and, you know, losing culture. Well, let me tell you, this year's heartbreak, maybe heartbreak's a little bit too dramatic. This year's disappointment with the Cleveland Browns is a different type of heartbreak for me. Because in past years with the Browns, you know, we always kind of expected the Browns to lose. So when they lost, it wasn't that much of, you know, a surprise because it's kind of what we expected. This year is different because we have more talent than we've ever had. And the fans, for once, aren't expecting to lose. And they expect to win. And they want to win. And, you know, the standard's been raised. So starting the season 2-6 is bigger than a disappointment. I'm not sure what word to use. And so this year's been tough, obviously. We're 2-6. We don't really need to win out per se, but we need to probably win the rest of our games or maybe one loss to have a chance at the playoffs realistically at 9-7 or 10-6. So our back's against the wall. We have to make a run now or our season's pretty much over. We have no chance at the playoffs. So pretty depressing stuff. The game on Sunday, like I said, we lost 24-19. It's crazy because, you know, the team complained about, you know, turning the ball over and having penalties. Then we clean those two things up. We don't throw any interceptions, don't turn the ball over, don't have penalties, and we still lose because of different reasons. So now we have missed tackles and other stuff like that. So it's just like we're like rotating reasons, you know, reasons why we lost. So for me as a Browns fan, I got to be honest with you guys. I'm tired of making excuses. I'm tired of making excuses for Freddie Kitchens. I'm tired of making excuses for Baker Mayfield. I'm tired of being embarrassed by losses. And this isn't my like farewell letter. I'm a real fan, so I'm not going anywhere. I'll be a Browns fan till I die, regardless of how the team does. But I am getting tired. And that loss on Sunday really took a toll on me personally because I was so excited about the game. So convinced that we're going to win, and the fact that we didn't win just really took the wind out of my sails. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Browns. 2-6 isn't great. It's a pretty crappy record, but we play like a crappy team. So going forward, this week we're playing the Bills at home. I was surprised to find out that even though the Bills are 6-2 and we're 2-6, somehow we're a 3-point favorite on Sunday, which blows my mind a little bit. You would think after losing the Broncos, you wouldn't be a favorite against almost anybody, but apparently the guys in Vegas know something I don't know. So that was a 3-point favorite. Granted, the game is in Cleveland, but still, 6-2 versus 2-6 doesn't seem too complicated. So what I think of the Bills game, I'm kind of done making predictions as far as scores. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's safer and more time efficient just to say who I think is going to win. So based on the fact that we lost to the fucking Broncos with a backup quarterback that has his first NFL start, I think it's obvious that I think the Browns are going to lose to the Bills because the Bills are 6-2. They're a good team. They have a good defense, et cetera, et cetera. Now, does that mean that I've lost all hope? Does that mean that I think the Browns don't have a chance to win against the Bills? No, I know that we still have talent. I know that we still can turn it around. I know that, you know, the Bills don't have a great rush defense, and we have one of the best running backs in the league. It's kind of a favorable matchup when you actually look at, you know, pull back the layers. But based on how disheartening the fucking loss against the Broncos was, I'd be an ass to pick the Browns to win over the Bills. And so I'm not going to. I think the Bills will win. I hope I'm wrong. I'm going to watch the game because I'm a real fan and hope that I'm wrong. The Browns definitely can win, but I'm tired of saying what the Browns can do. I need to start living in the reality of what they are doing. And what they are doing is losing. And so until they stop losing, I'm going to keep that same attitude. And so I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to be, you know, Eeyore over here. But it is what it is. We're 2-6. We find ways to lose. Baker's look like a mediocre quarterback. And we're not getting the ball to OBJ, you know, running Hilliard instead of I mean, the list goes on and on. Play calling. The ref screwed us on fourth down against Denver. Don't get me started. So, yeah, my Browns are 2-6. Fucking hooray. Let's move on, shall we? Ohio State had a bye last week. This week we're playing Maryland. They just released the playoff seedings, and they had Ohio State as number one, which is pretty fucking awesome. I was kind of surprised by that, to be honest with you, because a lot of people have their nuts all over the SEC, and so I expected Alabama or LSU to be ranked 1 and 2. But to my dismay, Ohio State was at 1, then Alabama 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, and then Penn State at number 4. So a lot of controversy around that. People saying, why isn't Clemson in? Why is Penn State that high? Why is Ohio State over the SEC teams? Kind of the typical stuff. You know, a lot of people are like that in college football. But it's all going to play itself out. We play Penn State in a few weeks, so that's going to be a huge game, 1 versus 4. And LSU plays Alabama this week. And so a lot of things will kind of sort themselves out. But I'm still feeling great. I think we'll beat we like I said, we just had a bye week. We played Maryland this weekend. I think that'll be another, you know, pretty big lopsided win. Maryland had a really good start to the season the first two games, but then they dropped off dramatically and have looked not as good. And so I think Ohio State will roll them. And then I think we have one more kind of easy game before we play Penn State and the team up north the last two games. So business as usual against Maryland. Buckeyes will roll over them, and then we'll move on to next week. So moving on to fantasy, before I get into our interview, this week's interview was with Lexi Floor. Lexi Floor is a star wide receiver currently for the DC Divas. She used to play for the Utah Falcons. And so I intentionally sought her out as an interviewee because I was really curious about her perspective. Not only is she a really good receiver in women's football, but also she's played on two of the premier teams in America. And so I really wanted to kind of pick her brain. She's also a very interesting person aside from that, but I wanted to pick her brain about, you know, her experiences on both teams and kind of the differences and stuff like that. And so great interview. It was a little bit over an hour. Awesome interview. I'm sure you guys will enjoy it, but she's a really interesting person, and that should be awesome. So next is going to be fantasy football. So I'm going to give you guys a list of players that had good weeks last week that you could pick up in fantasy. These are kind of like players you want to get, you know, if there's a bye week or an injury, just to, you know, plug them in so your team doesn't take an automatic L. These are also players that I checked, and they're in less than 70. They are owned in less than 75% of leagues. And so if they're over 75%, I don't put them on this list because obviously they're probably taken. But if they're under 75, then I add them. So here is the list. The first one is, well, for quarterbacks, there's four of them. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Brian Hoyer. I'm not sure if Brissett's playing or not, but he had a good game. Allen for the Panthers. They just announced that Cam's going to be on the IR. So Allen's going to be the guy going forward. And Derek Carr. Derek Carr actually played tonight. and he beat the Chargers by 2 points. So kudos to him. At receiver, we also have four guys. So there's Jamison Crowder for the Jets. He's been getting a decent amount of targets. Devontae Parker for the Dolphins. He's a huge pickup because their other receiver, I think his name is Preston Williams, just was announced that he's out for the season. And so Devontae Parker is going to get the lion's share, I would assume, going forward. So really good pickup for him. Pascal for the Colts. He's a good pickup because T.Y. Hilton, I think, is out for 2 or 3 more weeks. So Pascal's getting a pretty good amount of targets while he's out. Then the last guy is Renfro. He also played tonight. He plays for the Raiders. He's been getting some pretty good looks too. And he's a nice little shifty slot receiver. The only tight end I have on my list is Griffin. I think he plays for the Jets. He had enough targets in the last game that he's worth looking at. The three defenses that I highlighted were the Texans, Bills, and Eagles. They all had good performances. Texans, like, held, I think they held the Jaguars to 3 points. The Bills had a good game. The Eagles had a good game. The Bills are playing the Browns, so that one's a little bit tricky because Vegas is saying the Browns are going to win. We have a really great running back. They don't have a great run defense. So, you're kind of being risky if you pick the Bills, but it could pay off for you. You know, if the Browns keep on shooting themselves in the foot and having turnovers and stuff like that, defensive touchdowns, it could pan out for you. The only three defensive players that I have are Buda Baker and linebackers Cunningham and Thompson. I think Cunningham is for the Texans and Thompson's for the Panthers. And I think Buda Baker is a safety for the Cardinals. So all three of those guys had really monster games. Cunningham is a repeat guy that's been on my list before. I think Thompson is too. And so those guys have produced pretty solidly all year. But if you guys have IDPs in your league, those are guys to look out for. That's what I got for fantasy football. So without further ado, I want to show you guys my interview with Lexi Floor. Like I said, great interview. It lasted a little bit over an hour. But she's a super interesting person. Her perspective was really awesome. I got to know her better myself. I didn't really know her that much before this interview. But, yeah, hopefully you guys enjoy it as much as I do. Here you go.
I'd like to thank Lexi Floor for joining me on TL Talks podcast. Lexi Floor is a star wide receiver for the DC Divas, formerly the Utah Falcons. So first of all, Lexi, I know you're on the East Coast, so thanks for making the time for me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So usually how I start off the interviews is by telling my listeners how we know each other. So I think we've only seen each other maybe once or twice, but the first time was definitely when I was invited to coach on for the Hall of Fame game in Vegas. There was a lot of Falcons players were on that team. Pretty cool experience, you know, it was a kind of a hodgepodge of coaches and players. So pretty cool that game wasn't that competitive, but it's still a good experience. got to meet some people. And so that's how we met each other originally. So since then, I know that I've watched you, I'm trying to think. So when you guys played Texas, that I think it was the following year, right? At the, in Vegas again, actually. That was like
the second year.
Yeah, so that next year when you guys played Texas, I flew out there for that game too. So I got to watch that game live. And it was a really good game, came down to the end. They barely beat you guys. And then you ended up moving to D.C., which was a curveball. So I guess that's the first thing is how we know each other. That's kind of how we know each other. Obviously, we haven't talked that much, but I try to keep up with, you know, you, all the players that I meet, especially players, you know, that I like, you know what I'm saying? They never rub me the wrong way or anything. I try to keep up with them as far as their career and, you know, of course, root for them and their success. And so it's been cool to see you kind of, you know, travel cross country and ball out for the Divas. Secondly, before we get into football questions, if you don't mind, just kind of tell us a little bit about you as far as your background. Whether, you know, you can tell us anything. You can tell us, you know, where you grew up, where you went to school, if you got any degrees in anything, what you currently do for work, and then it's obviously your sports background as far as what sports you played growing up. And so spoil us with details.
Cool. Yeah. I grew up in Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay.
I went to Skyline High School. Then I went to the University of Utah. I did my undergraduate there and also my master's. And my undergraduate was entertainment arts and engineering, and my master's was film and media arts. So I'm a little bit of an art junkie in technology. But I played volleyball probably the most consistently out of all of my sports. I also ran cross-country competitively, and I competed in triathlons on a high level. But volleyball definitely was the sport that stole my heart very first.
Mm-hmm.
In high school, I was the shortest middle hitter in the state of Utah in high school. But I did really well. I had a vertical of like 24 in high school. I think now it's like 26 and a half. I have to check it. But I think tracking the ball in the air and having to adjust your body translated really well to wide receiver in football.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. So you were the shortest. So when I met you in Vegas, you definitely weren't short. I wouldn't say you're tall, you know, but you're just not a woman. So did you have like a growth spurt, or when was that?
Usually middle hitters are like above 6 foot, 6 feet. You know, like 5'7",
about.
Okay. So I was on the shorter side, but.
Okay, 4 feet.
I mean, I'm still tall, right?
Okay,
gotcha.
Okay. So your hops bailed you out. I got you. Okay. I respect that. All right, so background, you grew up in Utah, went to school in Utah. You were art major, so you're a little bit of an art junkie, which I can kind of tell. I definitely don't, like, pay that much attention to, like, your social media, but when I do see stuff on your social media, you kind of do have, like, an artsy vibe. And what I picked up on was, like, I think you had, like, some kind of fundraiser for your birthday, and it was, like, for something with the environment. It might have been, like, an ocean cleanup, something like that.
Yeah, it was ocean cleanup.
Yeah, and so that those kind of things are kind of cool to talk about because, you know, everybody's different. Everybody has different backgrounds. Everybody has different passions, you know, things that they're really into and they really care a lot about. And so since you are an artsy person, you do have, you know, particular interest in things like that. These interviews are kind of cool because they're not like, you know, these quick interviews where they're just trying to ask you 5 quick questions about football and you're off. They're more of like a conversation. You know what I mean? Like if me and you were to go out for lunch, you know, and we just like sit down and talk about life. So all that stuff is fun. We'll get into all that. So as far as background, I think you covered most of it. So schooling, you played mostly volleyball. You said you ran cross country, some triathlons. And then I guess my next question would be, I don't think we missed anything with background. We're good. So the next question is, obviously you eventually started playing football. So how did that happen?
Yeah.
I know that the Utah Falcons are great at recruiting. They have a great culture and something in the water over there. All their players are pretty bought in. So how did that happen? Was it kind of a word of mouth or a friend that was playing? Or
I sort of found them. I knew someone who knew someone that played. And she was like, yeah, it's so badass. She plays tackle football. And I was like, that sounds fun. Like, I want to check this out. So I pretty much just Googled them. And I first contacted the Utah Blitz. And they were like, yeah, come out. Like, it'll be cool. And then the Utah Falcons they seemed a little bit more legit, maybe.
Yeah.
So I went over to them to their practice. And we were running drills with, like, DBs and wide receivers, and I was like hooked from then on. I was like, I'm ready to kick some corner ass like all day. This is what I want to do.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so when I said that I've watched you several times in person, I want to say I may have, well, my memory isn't great. I'm not sure if I ever coached against you per se. I know I've definitely watched you in a couple games live. So it was obviously the game against Texas. There's also a game when you guys played the San Diego Surge in Utah. I also flew out for that game and saw that game. And so those games were crazy. The reason I bring it up is because my memory serves me correctly. They had you play DB that game. And so one of my questions for you is going to be, obviously you love receiver. It was kind of a, I would say easy, but a natural transition from volleyball. But when they asked you to play DB, was that kind of out of your comfort zone, or did you enjoy that too? Or
You know, I think a lot of times playing DB helps you as a wide receiver because you get to see what the competition is thinking. You know, you get to see what they're thinking when you're running routes or different moves, like a double move this way is going to mess them up or, you know, what. But, I mean, definitely wide receiver is my first choice, but corner is really fun. I mean, it is a lot more stress, right? Like, I was going to give a percentage, I would say it's like 51-49 to wide receiver, right? Because they already know what the plan is. They already know where they're going. And the corner's just playing catch up. So, and everything's backwards, right? Like, you start in the back pedal, like, everything's backwards for a corner. So, at least for me, it takes a second to catch on to a DB, but wide receivers, you know, that's my thing.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've always had a lot of admiration for corners just because of what you said. You know, like, the receiver already knows where they're going, you know what the play is. The corner does not. And so, unless that corner, like, is really, really on his game, his or her game, and they're, you know, like, studying film like crazy, you know what I mean? So they literally know what the play is going to be. You know, you're, like you said, you're playing catch up. You're it's a guessing game. If you guess wrong, it could cost you a touchdown. And so it is much more stressful. And so I have a huge amount of respect for DBs, especially corners, because it's really tough. And when I was growing up, there was like only one Caucasian cornerback in like the whole NFL. Mm-hmm. His name was Jason Sehorn. And then when he retired, I think it's been all black guys since. But yeah, I mean, it's just a really tough position. And so I have a huge amount of respect. And I saw when they put you in for San Diego at DB, I was just wondering. I was like, I wonder if Lexi, like, doesn't really like DB, but she's going to do whatever the coach asks her, you know what I mean? Or if she actually likes it, you know, she just wants to play, so she doesn't care where she's at. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I always love to be on the field, so no matter where I am, but it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Corner and wide receiver. I mean, once you get off the field and they're like, all right, offense, and it's like, oh, shit, my legs are pretty tired, but let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I got you. And in that game, I remember Guidry was playing receiver, right? That's back when we had the quarterback still, and she's a really big problem at receiver. So you had your hands full that day. That was a really good game. That was a classic game. I'm glad that I flew
out. Yeah, it was fun. I remember that.
All right, so good segue. The first question, as you know, is about life as a Falcon. So I know more than most, I would say, about the Falcons just because, you know, I've coached against them probably 6 to 8 times. You know, I've talked to Rick countless of hours over the years. About, you know, just coaching and life and his team and kind of how they operate. So I know a decent amount about the Falcons, but I don't know the Falcons from a player perspective necessarily, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't mind, give us, through Lexi's eyes, what life as a Falcon is like as far as, you know, how you how the program is run, the standards, you know, what you liked or didn't like, just stuff like that. Give us the inside scoop from your perspective.
Well, I would like to say that I truly love the Utah Falcons. I mean, that was like my home, right? That's where I found football.
Yeah, for sure.
And their whole organization, they're very organized. They're very, like, motivational. When they're about to go out on the field, they get, like, a motivational speech every time, and it's great. And they're always looking for a way to further the sport for women, you know, in a classy way. I always root for them. But playing on the actual team, for me as a wide receiver, was hard because I wanted to push my limits in play to be better, and the offense they run is designed around a run game, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like they do the triple option, which left me feeling like a second-class citizen as a wide receiver I was like a glorified O-line, right? Like, I was an extended tackle. I was just blocking. But I did take pride in my blocking. But I also wanted the pressure of catching, and I wanted to know what I could do. I wanted to know, like, how good I could get, you know? And,
yeah, push your limits.
I mean, what I had trained for, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had been running hours and hours of routes on top of practice a week, and I was outrunning my QB's arms. Like, they were getting tired before I was done. And I was exhausting all of my available resources at that time to get better. I was addicted. Like, yeah. When I first started playing football, I mean, up until now, like, I run as much as I can. But I was on a mission to be the best when I was in Utah. I mean, I am now. Like, I do pretty much the same thing, but it felt less rewarded, maybe. Mm. Like, I would go out on the field, and then I would block. And, I mean, it's hard to say how much effort I was putting in was actually making me a valuable part of that team. Like, I didn't feel as valuable as I could be to mm-hmm. that team.
Yeah.
I did catch a lot of touchdowns for the Falcons. Like, I'm not knocking them at all, but it was just not my style of offense.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you're a receiver. It's a very run-heavy offense, and so, mm-hmm. I mean, that's not a hard math equation to figure out. So, no, that's very fair. Is there anything else about the Falcons that, I mean, you said that they're organized, they're very respectable, mm-hmm. very classy team. They do a great job of motivating their players. So is there anything else that maybe people wouldn't know from the outside as far as the Falcons and how they're ran, or do you think it's all pretty much what it looks like?
I mean, it probably shows through in how the Falcons play, but they have such a strong sense of family. Yeah. Everything they do is for each other, and if somebody gets in a fight, like, another person's going to be there. I mean, they don't fight often. I think they only fought, like, once or twice the whole, like, 4 years I was playing for them. But, just that sense of, like, your family is a team, and your team has your back always, mm-hmm. you know? And I know that is definitely a championship mindset. And so that's definitely what drives them to, you know, block for each other. Or, you know, if a wide receiver catches a ball, it's everybody on the field has done their part in order for that person to be the end user of that play, right? Like, mm-hmm. the O-line is blocked. Like, somebody's blocked somebody downfield. Like, the quarterback has rolled out of the pocket or whatever, you know, like.
They made a good throw. You ran a good route. Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, and the other wide receivers have been a decoy or something, you know. Like, if you catch a ball, you thank everybody, not just you, you know.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes a lot of people on other teams, they'll get caught up in, like, I'm so good, or, like, I'm the best. Like, I don't even need anybody else, but you do. Like, your team is a machine, and if it works well, that's when plays happen.
Gotcha.
And that's when teams go to championships. Yeah, so... The Falcons, for, I think, whatever reason, like, their staff, their coaching staff, how they treat each other, they mesh really well every year, no matter who comes on the team. And that is why they're so good.
Gotcha. So what do you, I guess I don't want to be a dead horse here, but what would you attribute that to as far as how they mesh every year? What do you think the reason is for that? Do you think it's the fact that they are able to instill that family vibe to the team? Or do you think it's just good leadership, or, you know, brainwashing from Rick Rasmussen, or what do you think?
I think it's a little combination of everything. I mean, they do spend time together doing things like Topgolf, or, you know, and
team building stuff.
And I definitely think it's like the brainwashing technique of, like, this is your family, you know, like, and it's like every practice, like, you guys stick together. But it's also going out and partying after every game and with the other team. Like, I don't know if that's, like, the key, but when the Falcons would go out together, they would just, like, have such a great time. And I think that's when that bonding happened, you know? Mm-hmm. They would go drink and party or whatever, you know? And not everybody would drink, but we'd all just hang out together.
Yeah, and you genuinely liked each other. And so,
yeah, it was just like a hangout. Like, we were all friends.
Yeah.
Even if we weren't, like, friends like, really? We were, like, cordial, you know? Yeah. Not everybody liked everybody,
But, of course.
You know how it is.
Yeah. They're humans still.
Yeah.
I got you. That's fair. Okay. So we can move on to the Divas now. So like I alluded to earlier, you moved across the country, which is a pretty big move. I don't know if you had lived in Utah your whole life or what, but you moved literally from Utah to D.C. and joined the Divas and played for them last year. And so that move was huge, I'm sure, for you personally. Of course, you as a football player, you know, the cool thing for you, and I feel like you're a little bit spoiled because the Utah Falcons and the D.C. Divas, in my opinion, are two top five teams in the nation. You know what I mean? Mm. So you went from one top five to another top five. but at the same time, they're completely different as well. You know what I mean? They're completely different as how they run their – well, I shouldn't say how they run their teams. I don't know how they run their teams. But, like, on the field, right, they run totally different offenses and stuff like that. And so kind of a complete – like script flip as far as that goes. So when you did that, I guess I just wanted you to kind of give us an inside look at being a DC Diva as well. You know, since I've been involved in women's football, I've kind of nerded out on the game and educated myself on the best players, the best teams. You know, whenever I can fly out to a game to watch it in person, if it's going to be a big game against two good teams, I do that. And so the DC Divas are one of the only teams I haven't been at. I've only watched them.
You haven't been out to watch the Divas?
No, I did once. So when they played the Texas, they were called the Texas Elite. Remember they were Texas Elite before they changed? So before in the WFA, Texas Elite were one of the best teams. They played the DC Divas in a championship. And then, that was one of the times that I watched. So when I went to the WFA championship, I got to watch him in person, and I was just blown away. That was back when Allie Hamlin was the quarterback, and they had this really crazy awesome receiver.
Yeah.
Her name right now. I'm sure you know her name.
Oh, my gosh.
Wisnot. She's ridiculous. So when I watched them, I was just blown away, like, Wisnot was one of the best receivers I had seen, like, period, in the female game. Of course, Allie Hamlin's, like, a Hall of Famer. And they just, you know, like, when you go to a game, you can just see, just seeing from the stands, you can see, like how big the team is, how organized they are, how professional they are, like, how they do business, right? Like, you can tell it in the warm-ups. You don't even need to watch the game yet. So I was really impressed with both teams, of course. They're both top-notch teams. It was a great game, came down to the end. Really epic stuff. So I got to watch them before, and then since then, of course, I haven't watched them in person, but I've kept up with them as one of the top teams. Every single year, they have really high standards of football, and of course, their big rival is the Boston Renegades. So I guess my first question would be, give us a little bit of insight with what it, you know, how it is to be a DC Diva, and I guess the correlation of that with Utah and how that transition has been for you.
Well, for me personally, the Divas have been a breath of fresh air. I mean, we throw a lot. Our offensive coordinator from last year was running a spread offense, and we did run. I don't know if you know Deja, like our main running back, but she's extremely good at running the ball. Like, she's so shifty. But Amanda has an amazing arm, Congiati, our quarterback. And our wide receiver core this past year was the most talented one I have ever seen. Definitely ever played with, probably ever seen, like, top notch. Seriously, it's insane how much talent we have. And the culture here on the East Coast is also so nice to be a part of. I don't know if it's our advertising, but people just, like, know us here, like, approach us at the gym, or they're like, hey, are you like the wide receiver, or are you the quarterback? Like, Amanda and I will go to the gym together and just get, like, random, like, even, like, men coming up to us, you know? Like, how do you guys know about the Divas? It's really organized. There was, like, a change in staff, coaching staff, from last year to this year. And the coaching staff this year is, I mean, they all know each other and they all move together. So more of a cohesive group of coaches and teachers, mentors, mm-hmm. leaders. So I think from what we lacked last year in our organization is going to be like tenfold this year. And if, I mean, I'll be the first one to say it. If it's going to be any year, it's going to be this year. Like, this is our year. But our owner, Rich, is amazing too. And he puts so much together for the Divas. It's insane. Like, we get, like, beer in our locker room afterwards and pasta and pizza. Yeah, I don't know. But, and also, I don't know if you've ever been to a game or heard of it, but we have an indoor facility at the St. James. That's our home field. And it's, like, amazing turf filled with, like, it's an awesome facility. And it has rock climbing in there with, yeah, you know, it's like a multi-purpose facility, but.
Yeah, it's really cool. I just interviewed Neil Rosendahl
for
the podcast in the last week or two, and he was talking about some of those things. He talked about how you guys had a change in ownership, you know, a couple years ago, and he was happy to say that the new owner, the guy you just talked about, was, like, awesome, and he was doing great things with the organization, and the Divas, you know, won't be going anywhere anytime soon. But he also mentioned that field, and then when I looked online for it, I found at least one clip where it was, like, you know, kind of a highlight clip. It might have been when I was on your page, because I went on there to just make sure that I wasn't misquoting myself about the fundraiser that you had on there. So I saw the clip, and I think it was, like, a highlight video, maybe where Amanda was, like, rolling out through a sideline pass or something. But, yeah, I could see the indoor facility look really legit, so it's really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the lights are really bright, and sometimes that sucks, but, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, okay. So as far as being a diva, is there anything else, like, as far as the contrast of, I mean, obviously it's a different offense, and on the East Coast you said you get a little bit more, like, noticed in public a little bit more. Like, everybody in that community, it sounds like, knows about the Divas because they've been around for a while and they've been good for a long time. So apart from those, is there any other differences or?
Yeah, well, I think it is just a part of the culture on the East Coast that everything is taken so seriously in football. Like, it's a way of life to some people, you know?
Yeah, for
so
sure.
So when we step on the field or we're getting ready or we're practicing, like, everything is so structured. And, you know, if we're on the field, this is your time to get better, and you don't walk, or you don't, you know, you're always doing something. Nobody's standing around. It's very serious, and I like that, you know, because when I do something, I do it whole ass. That's right. So I said, like, I don't do anything half-assed. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it to my whole effort. Yeah, whole ass. So, yeah, no, and it's nice because sometimes, you know, you can go to a practice, and even on the Falcons, sometimes I'll be standing around for a long time, and I'm like, you know, I could be doing something. I could be running routes, or I could be, you know, helping somebody else. And I'm just, and, you know, I'll be listening to a play, and I'll be paying attention, but it did seem like sometimes a lot of standing around, but in the Divas, it's like you don't stand around. You get a full workout for the full 2 hours, you know, of practice. Or when you show up early to a game, like, you are getting ready and stretching, and you're running routes, and, you know, it's just very serious. Like, it's a little more serious.
Gotcha. And you like that because you're whole ass.
I'm whole ass. I'm whole ass it.
No, I can dig it. I've never heard that term, but I like it. I'll probably use it if you didn't.
Yeah.
So
you're welcome.
Appreciate it. So yeah, no, I can dig it, man. So that intrigues me. So I like how questions lead to other questions. So for me as a coach, I've been coaching women's football for about 6 years. The coach I was in year one is not the same person I am today. I'd like to think that I've gotten a little bit better over the years. But for the team I currently coach, which is the Denver Bandits, in the WNFC, you know, of course you see things that could be better, right? With any team, there's always things that can be better. But one of the things that I've struggled with as a coach is what you just talked about, right? So when you have players at practice and you're there for 2 or 3 hours, you want to make the most of your time, right? You don't want people standing around, especially if it's cold. It's just not cool. And so you want people to be active. You want people to get better. And you basically want to make the most of your 2 hours. So when you say, I'm trying to, like, figure out how that's even possible, because I'm thinking, like, in our practice, of course, we're going to warm up, right? Everybody warms up. Then you're going to go, like our practice will, like, go into individual drills. You know, it'd be, like, line and, you know, quarterbacks and receivers and running backs and tight ends. And then eventually from there, maybe we'll do group, right? Maybe the quarterbacks will go with the receivers. And then from there, you'll probably do team, maybe scrimmage against each other a little bit. And then before you know it, maybe you have conditioning and you call it a day. But in those scenarios, there is times where people are standing around, right? Like whether it be, so you think, okay, everybody's going to warm up unless you're late. Yeah, that's a check. Then you go into individual, everybody's active as long as they're there. Check. Then you go into group, everybody in theory should be engaged. Check. Then you go into team, and that's where it gets a little gray, right? Because if you're doing 11 on 11, which a lot of teams can't even do, which is sad, but if you're doing 11 on 11, defense versus offense, that's 22 players. So if you have anybody over 22 players, or if you have somebody, you know, who's a backup, right? So if your starting quarterback's there and the backup quarterback's there, obviously the backup quarterback can't play at the same time. So as far as that goes, how do the Divas stay active for 2 hours, literally, where you're not ever bored or, you know, feel like you're wasting your time? Like, how are they able to do that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think, well, this year, as far as the wide receiver core went, we only had, like, one or two people we were rotating in, because we also had, like, a slot and a wide out. Yeah. So, I mean, it was just that consistent rotation, right? Like, and if you're not in one position, if you're not in the slot, you're, like, learning another position, right? So they'll push you out to, like, the wide out, and then you'll kind of, like, rotate in that position, right? So you'll start with the slot, wide out, slot, and go, and then you're out. And then the next, like, two turns, then you go again. So you're constantly, I mean, you don't even, the rest of the plays happen so fast that you probably don't even get time to recover before you're on again, you know? Mm-hmm. And that mental preparation, like, being prepared, you know, because when you're going to rotate in the game, you got to pay attention, or else you lose your turn. And at least for me, I'm trying to get as many reps as possible, you know. But the more positions you know, like, the more reps you'll get. And the only way that you do that is by rotating in practice, right? So, I mean, maybe just, like, faster rotations. Or I know that the backup quarterback will be throwing, like, around the world. I don't know if people call it, like, at target, specific targets with, like, another wide receiver or something, you know, so you're getting touches in while you're still out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they also have, like, ladder drills on the side that, you know, the running backs, fullbacks will do while we're waiting, you know, mm-hmm. so just stay busy in any way possible, you know, keep your mind going too.
Yeah. So are you saying that, like, with the Divas, you would, like, as far as rotating positions, you would just do it yourself, or there was a certain, like rotation, or the coaches would do it for you, or how much of that was manual?
Yeah, I mean, it really depended from practice to practice, but our wide receiver coach would say, like, hey, in two plays, go into this, and then go, and then rotate here, and then rotate here, and then rotate here, and then you're out.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, so, yeah.
Got it. Okay, fair enough.
So there was direction, yeah. And, you know, I think it all comes with the expectation that you have and what you hold your players to, right? And then also disciplining them if they don't. Like, if they are always late and you say you're going to have to run a mile before practice, it, like, enforce that, you know?
Yeah.
I used to coach also at, like, the junior high level. And, you know, if a kid came late, I was, like, doing push-ups and runs. Like, you don't get a break. You don't get to miss, like, the practice or the warm-up that we all had to do, like, you know? So... Mm-hmm. Just the expectations and holding them to it, for sure, and that discipline.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the toughest things that I've found, you know, with minor league football, whether it be men or women, is, you know, since most of these players are paying to play, you know, there's unfortunately what comes with that is a lot of sense of entitlement. Mm-hmm. You're like, you know, I'm an adult. I have a life outside of football. I'm doing this for fun. And so, you know, whether, you know, they have a job or a family or whatever, a lot of people just they kind of assume a sense of entitlement as far as when they're going to come and go. And that's very unfortunate, because if you're ever going to be the DC Divas or the Utah Falcons, et cetera, it has to be different, right? There has to be a higher standard where, you know, practice isn't optional and being on time is mandatory. And so it's just, it's kind of a culture thing, you know what I mean? But it's kind of hard to instill that. But I think what you said is very key. You know, setting the standard and following through with the standard is huge, you know? So something to work towards, I guess. the next thing I was going to ask you about is Boston. So since we're on the subject of D.C., so like I said, in my opinion, D.C. Divas are a top five team in the nation. They have been for quite some time. Also, the Boston Renegades are one of the top five teams in the nation, too. And so since you guys are kind of two of the blue bloods on the East Coast, you guys have the pleasure, I guess it depends on who you ask, but I would say the pleasure of playing Boston probably, you know, twice a year, probably a home and away every year. So playing Boston, and in this case, you know, with the format of the WFA, you know, it's pretty clear cut as far as, you know, the amount of D1 teams in the WFA, you know, who's on the West Coast, who's on the East Coast. And in my opinion, you know, it's been kind of East Coast heavy for a while now. But for you guys, like I said, you guys, I think you guys went to two back-to-back championships when I was the game I told you I went to. But since then, Boston has kind of taken the lead on the East Coast. And so I know you played some great teams in your career. You played against, you know, Dallas when you were with Utah. But I feel like Boston is kind of a different animal when it comes to, you know, who they are as a team, the athletes they have on their team, the level of, I don't know, I guess recruiting. They have some players from other countries and stuff like that. So what would you say as a player, before we get into your Utah days, as far as the D.C.-Boston rivalry, what has been your experience as far as playing with Boston from your point of view?
Well, I think Boston is a really smart team.
Yeah.
Like, their quarterback can read the field. They make adjustments when necessary. I mean, maybe they should have been making more adjustments on defense, but they didn't. But, I mean, I don't think they have as much talent and are as quick as the Divas, but they definitely play as a family, like a single unit, and it shows.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just comes down to their mindset. I mean, they play really smart. But once we, you know, get up there, they better watch out.
Gotcha.
Their crown is about to, their foundation is about to fall.
Gotcha. So you think, for you, in your opinion, they're not necessarily more talented than D.C., but they are very smart. I think it's pretty obvious they're well coached. Like you said, they make adjustments when they need to make adjustments. And the players obviously have chemistry, you know, because they've been playing together for a while. And so there's a lot to be said for that, right?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of their key players have been playing for, like, a really long time.
Yeah.
So they're just, like, football IQ is, you know, as a player is really good,
Okay. Gotcha. So I guess before I move on, what was your experience as far as, like, just through the eyes of Lexi? Like, as a receiver, you know, for the D.C. Divas going against Boston Renegades, obviously huge game, whether it was home or away. I'm sure there's anticipation, you know, butterflies. You know it's a huge game. All your players are jacked up. how was that experience for you as an athlete? You know what I mean? Did you feel like you were alive because, you know, the best of the best going at it? Did you feel, you know, like they're the best team you played by far, or their DBs were really tough? You know what I'm saying? Or how was that for you?
Yeah, I think as far as their DBs go, they are not the best that I've ever played against.
Okay.
I would go as far to say that their DBs are not good. I mean, I'm going to say that's rude. They are, they have really great, a great coaching staff. And I think sometimes their DBs don't have the turnaround quickness time that it takes to stay up, to close the gap that they need to of separation.
Yeah.
With any upper level receiver, you know. But I'm sure they do really well against, you know, other teams, other wide receivers. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, when we first played them, I didn't know how big the rivalry was between Boston and I just didn't know. Yeah, but you know what? I did figure it out pretty quick. I mean, the crowd was lit and everybody was like amped up, and I definitely, when pressure is on and I need to step up, I've never not taken a challenge, you know. So that first game that we played, it was a home game against Boston. That's definitely, I think, when I at least stepped up in my receiving yards. At least that's when I started making a dent in the league, you know. But yeah, I mean, just that one game is when it's probably one of my favorite plays of all time playing football. I mean, it was definitely like I had to prove myself to this new team. You know, I came on, I pretty much walked on. I think I came, actually moved to Maryland.
Yeah.
Like a couple weeks or a week before our first game. And so I had been flying in and practicing with them, but I definitely wasn't getting as many reps as, like, the other receivers who had been there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But I came on, and then I didn't start that game. And I was like, you know, I don't deserve to start. You know, I'm barely here. I do know the plays, you know, and I didn't ever mess up really in practice. But, like, I didn't earn that spot, it felt like. And that was the game where that was me earning my starting spot, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it was a really fun game. It was one of the most fun I've had playing football ever.
Gotcha.
And so, the crowd was insane.
I bet. So was that first game that was in Boston or D.C.?
It was in D.C.
Okay.
It was a home game.
Home crowd. Yeah, I can, man. I might have to fly out for that one next year.
Yeah, it's going to be a good game, for sure.
Right on. So, home game against Boston was kind of your coming out party. and then what was I going to ask? Okay, so have you played for DC 2 years now?
I'm going into my second year.
Okay, yeah. So this is the 1 year. So you played against Boston. Has it been three times? Twice in the regular season, once in the playoffs?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And have you pretty much gotten your share of, like, yards and stuff in all three games? Or has it been kind of up and down?
Yeah. The second time we played them, I had a really bad high ankle sprain. And I was out maybe, I think it was before the half. And I kept doing everything I could on the sideline to go back in, and I was just like, I was so upset because I wanted to play in that game so bad.
Yeah.
And I just got tackled high and low, kind of both ways, twisting, and I just twisted my ankle really bad. And I remember trying to walk on it and, like, trying to run, and they were like, what if we tape it? And they taped it, like, twice on my foot. It was, like, on my foot and then over my sock, and then I put my shoe on, and then I taped it over my shoe, and I was like, I can't jump. I can't, like, take off. Like, I can't do what a wide receiver needs to do to, like, make plays. Like, I can't do this. So I sat out the rest of that game, and then I went to so much just, like, rehab, and I remember counting one time I had 32 dry needles in my ankle, and I was like sitting there, and it was like twitching as they were like just trying everything to get me back up for that third game, you know, the first playoff game.
Yeah.
But I was probably like, my ankle may have been like 50% in that game, so it was not very good, but it took forever. And sometimes I still feel my ankle, like I'll go through a really hard workout and I'm like, wow, my ankle's still sore.
Mm.
And it's been like months. But,
so the first game, you were normal and you balled out. Second game, about midway through the game, is when you got hit by two players kind of high-low and had a pretty bad ankle sprain, and you weren't able to finish that game. Then you were rehabbing the shit out of it until the playoff game, and you played in that game, but you were still only like 50%, so it wasn't like, you know, you didn't feel normal.
I played really well in that game, but I was just feeling it for sure. I mean, I was on like a lot of pain pills.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like pretty common. There's always some kind of injury, you know, like I've broken my pinky so many times that it doesn't close right anymore. But there, you know, you tape it and then you take pain pills, you know.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It's like a common thing, yeah.
I gotcha. Fair enough. Okay, so that's the scoop on Boston. I appreciate your transparency. So let's move on to Dallas. I know we're going backwards, but the Utah, like I said, that Utah game when you guys played Dallas in Vegas was a game that I was at. Really good game, came down to the end. They barely beat you guys. But what would you say from your perspective? I know obviously Utah's a different team. They have a different offense. It's very run heavy. That dynamic is totally different. But as far as looking through Lexi's eyes, how was that game from your perspective? You know what I mean? Like, as far as the Dallas DBs or how the game went, or, you know, things that people wouldn't know unless they were on the team. What do you have to say about that showdown?
Well, that game was so frustrating because we couldn't get a pass in. And it's because, well, first of all, Dallas is just a stronger team, like, physically. They're really versatile in being able to run and throw.
Mm-hmm.
And the Falcons were leaning way too much on their run game, as always, you know. And we were trying to throw timed routes. Like, every route for the Falcons is timed, and they're short. So if I was at all running into some kind of coverage, I was just getting plowed, right? Like, I was just getting fucked up. But, I remember trying to run a slant, but the Falcons do a one-step slant, and I was running straight into the outside linebacker, and I was like, you know, if they're stepping back, I'm not going to be able to catch that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she'll throw it before, I mean, that's her pre-read snap, you know? She'll throw it before she sees, and a lot of times that works for the Falcons, but it didn't against that team, and...
Yeah.
They didn't know how to adjust because they hadn't ever, and this was, I mean, two years ago, right, or three, but they didn't know how to fix it. And so they were running, like, timed fade routes, and it just wasn't working, you know? And they don't have anything else up under their sleeve, or they didn't. And so, I mean, I think I caught maybe two or three balls that game, and that was it. I didn't make any touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard. I remember walking away just like so frustrated. I was like, we got shut down, and that was our whole playbook, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not a mystery what Utah runs. You know what I mean? Like, everybody knows Utah runs a triple option, and pretty much their only two pass plays are either a quick slant or a fade.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually a pre-snap read. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not a great mystery of women's football. But, I mean, even with that said, like you said, against most teams, that's enough. You know what I mean? Like, when you're running triple option and you're gashing them on the ground, eventually they're going to come up on defense. That's when you can throw over top. You know, or if they're backing way off, you can throw a quick slant and, you know, it's an easy pitch and catch. But, like you said, playing most teams and playing Dallas is two different things. So I guess my last question for Dallas would be, what did you attribute that to? I know that you're saying it wasn't working like you usually would, and the pre-reads weren't smart, but what do you attribute to why it wasn't working? Was it like defensive adjustments, or was it this crazy athlete? You know what I mean? Like, what do you attribute that to?
You know, I'm probably going to get like murdered for this, but Utah doesn't play. They don't, I'll say this, they don't have plays, or they don't adjust for the type of athletes that they have on, for their team. And so if you have a playbook and you're looking for people to come in and play, it's got to be a perfect fit, and it's got to be fucking crazy, you know, because, like, you have to work with what you have, and they don't do that. And it's been working for them. So, you know, like, whatever, it works. But in instances where they lose, it's because they were not flexible enough to do something like a combination route, like a stop-and-go. Stop-and-go would have been a touchdown in that game, 100%. If the line could hold for a little bit, that would have been a touchdown, you know, or, like, a slant and go, or, you know, I mean, any combination passing route. Yeah, I mean, it would have been just a joke. But Utah had never planned for that, and Utah had never practiced that. So it was just out of their league to be able to do something like that. And I get that they're a running team, but if they had more tricks under their sleeve like that, it would have been a different type of game.
Gotcha.
I mean, from my perspective. But I'm also a wide receiver, so that would be something I would say, right? So, I don't know.
No, I mean, I feel like that's fair. I mean, you know, like I said, it's not a mystery that they're a triple, you know, triple option team, run heavy, and that they run slants and fades for the receivers, and it's usually a pre-snap read and a throw into a spot. Everybody knows that. But, like you said, if the defense knows that, and they're defending both of those routes, there has to be a plan B, right? And so it's kind of a catch-22, because Utah Falcons have existed for 6 years, and in 6 years they've lost four games. So it's less than one game per year that they've lost in their entire existence, which is phenomenal, right? So when you have that crazy of a record, it's kind of hard to argue with, you know, what's happening. But, like you said, when you get against somebody like Texas, they were called Dallas at the time, against Dallas or, you know, Boston or one of these top teams, that's when it matters, right? That's when finally, maybe, if you have kind of a cookie-cutter, you know, type of offensive plan, that might not be enough. And so what's crazy is even all those things being said, and everything you've said has been accurate. I was at the game. I watched it. But even those things being accurate, still, you know, Dallas barely beat you. You know what I mean? Like, they scored at the end, in the fourth quarter, at the end, to take the lead, and then kept the lead. And so it's crazy to think about it. You know what I mean? Like, you guys did run the Utah offense, which is cookie cutter, and you had two or three catches, didn't get to score, and they still barely lost. That's crazy to think about. You know what I mean? But it is what it is. Like, you know, Rick's been coaching longer than I've probably been alive. And, you know, he knows that offense very, very well. And the team knows the offense very well. A lot of them have chemistry like all these great teams do. And so it's like a well-oiled machine. You know, and when you play most teams in women's football, just the fact that they have the numbers that they do and that they run their offense as well as they do is good enough just to blow most teams out. And then you don't really get, you know, that tested until, you know, you play these top teams like Texas or Boston. So it just kind of is what it is. But they're an awesome team. I have a ton of respect for Rick, the organization. I love the players over there. I have a lot of respect just for them in general. But me, I'm a competitive guy like you. Like, I'm a perfectionist, and I want to be the best. Like, I'm not doing this, you know, like, as a hobby or, like, just for fun. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to take over the world. So when I was with my former team, that was the goal. And then, you know, I'm not with them anymore. And then with this new team in the WNFC, that's the goal again. And so, you know, every year you just try to be better than you were the year before. Learn from your mistakes. Don't be an idiot. Just make the same mistakes every year. And then eventually, you know, you should get where you need to be if you do all things the right way. So that's the goal. But anyways, okay, so that's Boston and Dallas. Only a couple subjects left before I let you go. I know you're past your bedtime, so I appreciate you.
No worries.
So the next thing is, I noticed earlier I mentioned that you had some stuff on your Facebook of like environmental stuff, like the ocean cleanup for your birthday and stuff like that. And so I know you mentioned that you're an artsy person. So I'm kind of intrigued, honestly. I mean, not that this matters, but you're a beautiful woman and you seem very intelligent. Yeah, you seem very intelligent. And when I was around you in Vegas, I mean, I probably didn't hear you say two words. Like, you don't talk much. And so it's not really a bad or good thing. Some really brilliant people don't talk much. But because I didn't talk to you much, I don't know you that well, like, personally. So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about, like, things that you care about, things that you're passionate about from a social perspective, political perspective, environmental perspective, because I'm all about learning. So I'm curious kind of, you know, what makes you tick.
Well, I definitely feel like humans don't have enough responsibility in cleaning up the planet like we should. I mean, the plastic in the ocean, that's a big issue. And some people are ignoring it, and that's not cool. But, I mean, also the whole environment. Like, I strongly believe in electric cars and trying to reduce our carbon footprint, right? Like, that's the future, and we need to stop fighting it, you know. But also, I dedicated my educational career to building a foundation for marginalized groups of people to voice themselves, to be heard. And I think too often we ignore people who don't fit in the socially accepted mold that society has for everybody, whether that's your body type or your race or your sexual orientation or whatever. Like, we need to be all more accepting as a whole. And so through art, which is, I do film, documentaries, is how I want to highlight those things, and kind of like as a public service, right? Like, educate the public about certain issues, but specifically, you know, minorities. And like, at the very least, all humans should be nice to each other, right?
Yeah.
So that was like my calling, and I just graduated last May. And
congrats.
So I'm still on that, like, train, you know, like, I'm going to change the world, you know, but I will, like, eventually, you know, before I die. So.
You got plenty of time. You're a young woman.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, right on.
30, yeah.
Okay, I respect it. Yeah, so I definitely vibe with a lot of those things. I think that I could be, personally, not that you asked, but I think I could do a little bit better of a job. With environmental awareness. Like, I'm one of those people that I'm introspective, and I'm a lot deeper of a person than most people are. And so I think about things that most people don't think about. So, like, whether it be, you know, just, like, things that either people take for granted or things that people are doing that's like, hurting our society or could hurt the world or Mother Earth, you know, like, for our grandkids or our grandkids' grandkids. Like, it's just... You know, I feel like we live in a society that's very self-serving, and it's very, like, what can you give me now? And they're not really thinking about the future, and they're not really thinking about anybody but themselves. That's a huge issue. And so, for what it's worth, I commend you because, you know, anybody can live for themselves, but it takes somebody, you know, that's made of more than that to live for somebody else and to care about somebody else and to want better for other people. And so I salute you for that, first of all. But yeah, I guess I didn't ask you about political, which that might be smart. So environmental stuff, that couldn't be highlighted enough. As far as the social stuff, so you said you do film, right?
Yeah.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I'll ask you to plug stuff at the end of this, so keep that in mind. Yeah, it's very cool. I mean, whenever you have stuff coming up, if you want to send it over to me, I can put it on my website. You know, like, everything you've told me is stuff that I'm that I'm down with, that I vibe with. And so I would love to help you get stuff out there as much as I can. But yeah, only two questions left before I let you go. So, coolest experience. I know that you, this can be football or non-football, or maybe there's two answers. But coolest experience you've had in your life, whether it be if you traveled to a different country, or, you know, you went on some random trip on the weekend, or you had some really cool experience with a football team, what would you put at the top of your list at the young age of 30?
Man, one of the coolest things I've ever done, and it was just, like, visually insane. So I went to Puerto Rico maybe 10 years ago. And maybe it was, like, 9, whatever, around there. And I went to do the Bioluminescent Bay, a midnight kayaking tour. I don't know if you've ever heard about it, but...
I have not.
Basically, the tiny organisms in water, and Puerto Rico... It was the brightest until the hurricane went through there and sort of destroyed that ecosystem. But little organisms, when they are moved, it, like a rapid pace, they'll light up, and they're like a green, like fluorescent color. And so at night, you can see it really well. And it was like, it was just like Avatar. Like if you hopped in the water, which you weren't supposed to, but if you did,
yeah,
you could see it like all around you. And it was like you were, I mean, it was swimming around you, and everything you splashed and everything that hit the water was just like lighting up like crazy. Well, when I was out there on the kayak, I mean, we were in the middle of this really big lake, and we were sitting there, and people were like playing in the water, and then it started to rain, like jungle rain that it does there, and the whole lake was just lit up with splashes everywhere, and it was insane. Like it was unlike anything I've ever seen before, and I was just like in awe. Like this lake is like full of this organism, and it's thriving so well here, and it's so cool, you know. And it was just really cool to see. I mean, the lake was like black until it started raining, and then it was just like lit up like green like crazy all the way to the edges, and then we kayaked back, and you know, and it was like late at night, but it was a really cool experience. But yeah, my football experiences, so I do have to shout out to Louise Bean, one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time. She's just, like, so chill. I mean, we don't, like, super agree on, like, everything in life, but, I mean, when we step on the field, we just, like, jive, you know, like, some of those people. And she's always down to, like, listen and do better and, you know, do anything to make herself better, you know. And every time I call her to go throw, she's like, of course, like, I'll be there, you know. But... I remember one time in the championship game in Utah, when it was in Utah, and it was our whole crowd, and it was a ton of people, she threw me a timed fade route. And I remember, like, catching the ball just like it was following me, like, tracking me down, and I caught it easy to make a touchdown. It was just, like, textbook. And hearing her describe it afterwards was incredible. And I didn't even hear it from her. I read it in the newspaper. And she said that she threw the ball, and she didn't even... look, she just like trusted that I was gonna be there, and then she like turned to the crowd, and she said that the crowd was going wild, and she knew right when I had caught the ball because of the crowd's reaction. But she, the way that she compared it was to giving birth, like her one of her children, and she was like, "You, when you give birth, you don't see the baby, you hear it cry, and then you hear like the chatter of the people in the room that see it first." And she was like, "That's exactly how that." That fade route was like, I already knew that it was a touchdown. And I was like, wow, Bean, like, that's so poetic.
Yeah, for real. That reminds me of like when basketball players, sorry to interrupt you, when basketball players like shoot the ball and don't look and it goes in, you know what I'm saying? You're like,
oh, yeah.
How'd you not look? What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say another one of my experiences from the Divas. My little buddy, QB, Amanda Congialdi. We honestly link up so naturally on the field. It's incredible. Like, our chemistry on the field is unmatched to anything I've ever experienced. We have so many, like, amazing scrambling touchdown passes or, like, back shoulder fade passes that I step right over the corner of the end zone or, like, right over the top of double coverage we did in the All-American game.
Nice.
But my favorite of all time was, like, our home game against Boston. That one play I was talking about where she was scrambling to the right, and then she, like, stiffed on the girl and started running to the left, which was, I was on the left side. That's where I was. And she, I remember, like, seeing her. We, like, I swear we made eye contact, but we were, like, 40 yards apart. And I remember saying, like, oh, she spotted me. And my corner was, like, long gone by that time. Like, she was watching Amanda scramble, and I was, like, on the lone side of the field, and Amanda just chucked it. And I remember tracking it down, and I caught it backwards. I mean, like, facing downfield. And I turned around and in, like, one step and ran down and made a touchdown. And that was, like, the first time in my wide receiver career that my coach, Eric, gave me a high five. He's very hard to please, but yeah, thank Eric for the hard love.
Yeah.
But...
That's amazing.
Yeah, no, it was just, like, a beautiful, like, those moments happen in almost slow motion, you know,
yeah.
And you're catching, you're like, wow, this is happening, you know, it's so cool.
You're
got
like, whoa.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So last question before I ask you to plug, and you have to go to bed. So what are your thoughts on the WNFC? So they had their first season last season. Since they, you know, began, you've been the WFA since then. So what is your opinion of that league? Do you know anything about them? Are you impressed? Or what's your two cents?
I mean, yeah, you know, I've never personally played in the WNFC, but from what I hear and what I see, I think it's only bringing good things to women's football. I mean, their advertising is great. And, you know, they had a breakout season. I thought it went really well, and I didn't even know I wasn't even in it. But,
yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the way it's going, like, only up, you know. And I'll hop on any train that's going to get women's football to the right place in the right way,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, I mean, whoever can do it. I mean, the WFA has been doing a great job. I mean, this past year was great. Everything was, I thought, really organized, especially at the championship weekend in Denver. But, I mean, if the WNFC can, you know, collect everybody under one umbrella and do a good job and have it really organized, I don't think anybody would have a problem with that.
Gotcha. Okay, fair enough. All right, so we're way past your bedtime, so last thing. I want you to plug... So plug whatever the hell you want to. So whether it be your art or your films, DC Divas, you know, your Instagram page, I don't give a shit. But my platform's yours. So how about it?
I mean, obviously the DC Divas, but I don't know. I might have to plug my Instagram. It's SheLifts, SHE_LIIFTS.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually try to update it with things that I'm doing. I'm not very good at it, you know, like at updating it all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll try to be more consistent, I guess.
Gotcha. And nothing for film? Are you like working on stuff, or is it just ongoing long-term projects, or?
Yeah, I have created a few short documentaries. They're on Vimeo. It's vimeo.com/LexiClore.
Okay.
You can check out, like, my teaser for my graduate film. And I also made a short for Sundance in 2016. I won a short contest there, and that's on there. It's called Unconquerable. Let's check it out.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, yeah, I appreciate you joining me. Just so you know, I air all the podcasts on Friday nights, so 8 p.m. here, 10 p.m. for you. So my website's tltalkswithaz.com. If you want to check it out, I've had some pretty good interviews so far. I interviewed the owner of the Boston Renegades in a previous interview. So it's pretty cool stuff. But, yeah, I really appreciate your time, Lexi. It's great talking to you. I got to get to know you a little bit better. And so hopefully we can talk again. So maybe I'll see you at one of these games. I might fly out for the Boston DC rematch.
Come out.
Yeah, if you enjoyed this interview, maybe I can have you on next year, like kind of as a annual thing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down.
Okay.
Thanks for letting me be a part of it.
Absolutely. All right. Talk to you soon. Have a good night.
All right. You too. See ya.
Bye.
And there you have it. That was my interview with Lexi Floor. Like I said, really enjoyed the interview. It was, I felt bad because she said she usually goes to bed kind of early. And she said she has been sick recently. And so she kind of stayed up past her bedtime for me. So I feel special. But yeah, awesome interview. She gave some really good insight about her experiences in Utah and D.C. And who knows, maybe I'll be able to fly out to D.C. for the D.C.-Boston game this year, because I would enjoy that. It just kind of depends on what's going on with my team. But anyways, that's what I have for you guys this week. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Thought of the day was good. I actually wanted to rant a little bit more about the Browns, but I'm kind of glad I didn't, because I could have got a little crazy with curse words and stuff like that. But yeah, I love my Browns. Just 2-6 is hard to swallow. And us losing to the Broncos was ridiculous. So is what it is. But who knows? I think the Browns will turn it around. Just a matter of when. And when could be Sunday. The one thing I did forget to mention is we're getting Kareem Hunt back this week. And so seeing him added to the offense is going to be interesting, because he's a really dynamic running back. He could be, you know, he could kind of put us over the edge as far as our offense and being explosive. And so, you know, I'd much rather have him get the ball instead of Hilliard, no offense to Hilliard. And he also is really good with catching and can get in space and make people miss. So who knows? Maybe this is the week that we finally turn it around and beat Buffalo and then go on a run. But with how the Broncos game went down, I'm not holding my breath. So we'll see what happens. But love you guys. Thank you for your time. And I look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great weekend.